Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you doing this morning, Dr. Paul?
Doing very well.
Good.
Ready to solve another problem,
That's
as
right.
usual.
Another day, another problem.
Of course, I might be fooling myself. Who knows? But we certainly don't want to create new problems. And some of these bureaucrats and people who don't know what to do, and when they do something, whether it's out of ignorance or on purpose, they usually create two new problems.
Yeah.
Right now, we're trying to make the case for the reversal of that. Because yesterday, we talked about Dallas Morning News backing off and sounding like they read one of our stories or something.
Yeah.
So maybe they're losing that support they needed in the establishment to keep this hoax going. But we want to mention another one today, and that is NPR. We have a couple stories from them, and they're coming around to being sounded pretty sensible, and yet they were seen as not challenging the state's opinion about what's going on with coronavirus.
Exactly.
So this is very good. So they're challenging that now, and there's an article that we found. The first one I mentioned is studies point to big drop in COVID-19 death rates coming from NPR.
NPR, yeah.
Well, this, I believe it could be true. Of course, we've been arguing that all those numbers were fake anyway. I mean, there were people dying, but when you sort out the data, how they collect it, and when you sort out, bonuses you get for marking it down, and then sorting it out with the people who had other diseases, like in nursing homes, all of a sudden it wasn't nearly what they said. And then those early predictions, remember, millions and millions of people are going to die. Turned out they're admitting, well, we missed it by a few million here and there.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a shift in attitude, and I think that's very good. But, you know, one thing I found a little bit ironic is even the enemy, the people who promote the misinformation, recognize that it looks like children might not be as vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think we've been saying it, and a lot of professionals have been saying it. And basically, children up until the time they get out of high school are very much not vulnerable to this. And yet, when it comes to the problems that come about from the lockdown, they're disproportionately punished. They're used as victims. They're guinea pigs, and they're suffering from it in a lot of different ways, physically and mentally, and the whole works, especially educationally. It's been a real disaster for them, and that's still ongoing. But now they're starting to recognize. There's a few things that people are starting to say. Well, maybe we went overboard, and they certainly have. But I guess you have to change people's minds before they'll change their policies. So we might be in transition there, that they're going to see a lot more kids going back to school. We've seen more go back to school, but there's still a psychology there that I don't like, because there's still a lot of kids going to school, little kids like this, and religiously they wear this mask, and this is disgusting. And it's not that every single one of them is going to get physically sick from it, but a lot of them do.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard so many stories about mouth diseases and acne, and all these kind of things have been made much worse with these masks. So, but I found this pretty good, you know, the NPR. So if they've lost NPR, maybe they'll be talking our language.
Yeah, and you know the young people, how disproportionately, as you say, they've been affected. It's amazing. And even Redfield, the head of the CDC, said that they're 5 to 6 times less likely to die than they would be with the flu. But what we're talking about, first of all, on the schools, I mean, we're going to get into it a little bit more, but with a lot of exceptions, because there are a lot of good public school teachers. There's no question. But my guess is a lot of them love getting their full salary from sitting at home and doing nothing. You know, they like that. But here's the article. It's up here on the screen. Studies point to big drop in COVID-19 death rates. NPR, and that's one of the reasons it caught our attention. And the next article we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes is NPR, too. So this is not Alex Jones. This is not, not that there's anything wrong with him. But this is really NPR. And the crux of this article that we looked at is there are two new peer-reviewed studies that note a sharp drop in mortality among hospitalized COVID patients. And it's an New York University study. It started in March, and it's continued through the progress. At the beginning of the study, there was a 25.6% chance of dying if you're hospitalized with COVID. Now, at the end of the study, that chance has gone down to 7.6% chance if you're hospitalized with COVID. And there are a lot of questions about it. What does that mean? I think probably we can guess, and it's sort of hinted at in the article, that the use of ventilators early on killed a lot of people unnecessarily, and you probably have some thoughts on
that. Yeah, that's for sure. They jumped the gun, and then it didn't take them long to make it illegal to use hydroxychloroquine, you know, which is still not proven to be a danger.
Yeah.
There may be still some things that they should research and work it out. But they've had about 60 years of experimentation or usage that people have used, and the people who have used it are the ones who defend it the most. But because this disease, which they don't define very well, and this is one of the reasons why this testing doesn't mean very much, because when you realize it, it's not easy to test this virus. They have to concoct the virus. They have to get bits and pieces and pretend they can put it down. Ah, coronavirus. And then when you get a reward for it, and that is one of the sickening parts of this, is you get more money from the government if you just add on there the diagnosis of coronavirus, which it's on the verge of being sinful, at least fraudulent.
It should be illegal.
But it's done all the time, and this was a motivation to pump up these numbers, and fortunately, though, there's been more and more people now coming up with the statistics to show that they're not true, and the charts that are best, and you've put them up quite frequently, are the ones that the charts show, even on their statistics, which we even would question, is the chart that soars up and goes down and has been down to, essentially zero for practical reason, essentially zero on people dying from the virus. But there's still a lot of hysteria out there. And just think of the political demagoguing that goes on, And I made this point before, but to me it's so strange that you can have a discussion on science, which is legitimate and proper, but how did it ever happen that one side of the argument is Democrats, the other side is Republicans?
Yeah.
I mean, science doesn't work like that, but that's exactly what happened. If they don't win the whole program, then you still see a split, like on hydroxychloroquine. This was a split, but you don't see any of Biden's supporters saying, "Boy, it's too bad that somebody didn't get to use this drug a little bit sooner." You don't get one single one because it's politically improper to take that position. And so science has been sort of shoved to the side. Maybe what we're talking about here and these studies is maybe it's the reigniting of a little bit of scientific research and scientific thought on what's going on.
Yeah, and we know this. We've talked about it. And it is a fact that they got more money from putting people on a ventilator. I don't know, $16,000 each person in the hospital got extra. More money, that's an incentive. I'm sure that's not the case that a doctor said, "Hey, I'm going to get some more money. Let's shove this thing down the guy's throat." So even if we give them the benefit of the doubt, and I'm sure there were some bad actors, even if we give them the benefit of the doubt, what this study suggests to me is that they have evolved in their treatment. And they even say it, their treatment has evolved. They've looked at different things. They've looked at different interventions. The cytokine storm or something. They've figured out how to deal with that. Probably steroids and other things, a lot better than I do. But they have evolved in their treatment. But what's interesting in this is because it's NPR, it's still in that article. They have to put all of the conventional wisdom, even though the headline and the main point is very important. So they've evolved in how they've treated the virus in the hospital. But they haven't evolved up here in how they deal with the virus. So you'll have the same old shibboleths in this article about social distancing, masks, this, that, and the other. So this, and also equal danger across the age levels. And they still do that. Everyone is just as susceptible. So they keep these things. So they're not evolving in their mind, even as medicine itself is evolving in how to treat it.
Yes, and one part of all this that annoyed me to no end was the social pressures. You know, people go shopping. They don't do it because they think they need it. They do it because, do I have to go in there and fight with the clerk? And do I have to look at a neighbor that's going to look at me and say, why are you doing this? You know, there was one part of it with the kids that bothered me. And that was not that so much that the kid, well, this is important. The kids don't get it and they don't need this. But what it has turned into is almost a very, very negative, dangerous thing into a fun thing.
Yeah.
You know, we'll paint things on their mask and make it easier, and this will be a little game. And they turn this around. I think they'll get tired of it, and I think they are getting tired of it, and I think the parents even are getting tired of it all. But they've worked real hard at this to condition people to take something that is very bad for them, you know, politically, economically, health-wise, the whole works. It's not a positive, and yet they said, "Well, we'll make you have fun doing this," you know,
yeah.
and the whole thing is turns into a farce at times.
It does. Well, speaking of children, and if we can actually skip ahead to the third slide because we're kind of jumping around a little bit. But speaking of children, here's Dr. Scott Atlas, and we've been championing him. He got into some more hot water with what I consider to be a terrific tweet, and so do you. And this is hence the topic of our show today, the war on children. Here's Dr. Atlas. Children are being literally destroyed. But hey, better keep testing them, finding asymptomatics, confining low-risk young people, test a college sewage system, limit in-person classes, must find those cases. And by the way, that's not a lockdown. Amazing tweet. I mean, he gets it. He gets what's happening to the children, the war on children.
Do you think that Hillary probably won more than we realized, and she's created her village, and we have this village taking care of the kids?
Taking care of the kids,
you know,
yeah.
This is what I would expect from her village, but, you know, in a way, it's this, sincere concern. At the same time, I just can't even imagine somebody like Fauci or Bill Gates thinking about what is the best thing to care for these children, you know, and or care about the principles of liberty, you know, and then be willing to have an agenda where they're willing to actually distort and give up on science. You know, they have to take a non-scientific viewpoint. They have to know what they're doing, but their scientific viewpoint is the plans they have to run the world and control populations. So for them, they're coming from an angle that, yes, we are using science that only the elite really understand.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they see themselves as elitists that are in this participation of managing things and managing affairs and managing the kids, even though I wonder when Fauci and Gates is going to come up and say, you know, I think we missed the ball. We've overreacted. The odds of that happening are like 1 in 10 million.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not going to do it because I think the results we're looking at, the bad stuff, has been not just an accident. I think innocent people get drawn into it for all kinds of pressure, social pressure as well as political pressures, and they go along with it. But the people that have orchestrated this, and it's the thing that we're celebrating right now is the breaking of a few individuals in the media and taking a different position. Before, you know, it's been 100%. It's probably still way too high that they endorse this. And then you throw in a political campaign from this, which has really, I think, sickened the whole process that, if you take a different position, you murdered those kids, you know, or murdered those people. So they use that as a political tool, which is pretty ugly.
And that's why they hate Dr. Atlas so much, because he tells it like it is. He's telling inconvenient truths. He's breaking up this monolithic control over the debate, and it's driving them crazy. But while we're on Atlas, so before we go back to where we started, can we move one ahead from that tweet? And here's something that I sent this to you yesterday. This is an interview that Dr. Atlas did, and the topic of face masks came up. And this is really, really fascinating. He's doubling down on this. He says things like universal mask wearing, honestly, that is contrary to the science as well as common sense. To think you need to wear a mask when you're in the middle of the desert, when you're in a car on your own, when you're bicycling through St. James Park, this kind of stuff is nonsense. There is no science to support universal masking. That's Dr. Atlas in an interview that he did, I think, a couple of days ago. That is why they are going nuts with having him.
I don't think he gets too much attention on CNN or MSNBC. I don't think they take that. No, he's a strong voice for it, and he's becoming stronger. And I think, we have now for a week or two talked about maybe we're seeing a little bit of a shift in attitude. He may be, should be credited for helping do that now, because he is a credible person, even though they're not accepting him on all the channels. But I think he has, scientific credentials, and he's a good spokesman for it. So he probably deserves a lot of credit for this change in sentiment. And that fits into my argument that you got to change people's attitudes and their sentiment. But it's tough when the opposition is about 99% in opposition for political reasons rather than for scientific reasons, because they're not very open to a scientific discussion. But he's presenting it now, and there are more people listening. So I think this is why hopefully we'll see more and more people say they might not come forth with a confession, but they might come forth all of a sudden. They represent a magazine or a newspaper, and finally just have a shift in attitude, and say they should do it, because they're going to lose credibility. Short term, they get away with it. Long term, you lose the credibility no matter what. It's just that too many people suffer if you don't try to stop it as soon as you can, if it's all based on misinformation.
Yeah. Well, in the interview, he also made again this point. He said herd immunity is not a strategy. That's like saying gravity is a strategy. Herd immunity is a process that's been recognized since the beginning of time. And he also made the point, if you say there is no such thing as herd immunity, then a vaccine is impossible, because the purpose of a vaccine is simply to help a society get to the point where the virus can no longer replicate and find new hosts. So if there's no herd immunity, there's no vaccine. But we also want to go back, let's circle back to that second clip. And this is another NPR study. NPR has been good to us. Maybe we should make a donation over there. Two new international studies have found no consistent relationship between in-person K-12 schooling and the spread of coronavirus. And in a third study in the U.S., there's no elevated risk to childcare workers who stayed on the job. Duh, that's just like Sweden and South Dakota and elsewhere where they didn't shut down.
Right, and I think this is going to come through. I want to make one point along this line and about the immunity, because I think words are very important. And even though herd immunity has been around a long time, scientists know what it is, and it's a natural phenomenon. But I like to use the word natural. Because the immunity goes through populations, and they can trace this even before they didn't even have any help whatsoever from antibiotics or whatever. They would know how diseases go. But now, it can be interfered with good health habits and antibiotics and whatnot. But I think if we would call it natural immunity, well, how can they be against natural? Oh, yeah. But I've heard a few of them, mocked it because it was, and they took it as a as a racial thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard him going, oh, you're a racist.
Yeah, yeah. It's insane. But this study is really important. And there's another one. The Yale study was the one on childcare workers. It says they followed 57,000 childcare workers in all 50 states. And there were two groups, those that stayed at home, stopped caring for kids, and those that kept up on their job. And they noticed that there was no difference in infection rate between the two groups, whether you stayed home or whether you continued working with children. We could extrapolate and put teachers into that same category. They had no elevated risk for infection. The workers didn't. So the whole thing is, I can't go back to work because I might get sick. No, it doesn't follow. But in the same report, they do quote Dr. Danielle Dooley, and she says that the school closures have had an incredibly negative effect on children, mental health, obesity, hunger, alienation, lack of education. Only downside, no upside on the whole thing.
you know, in the way they do this makes a big difference. Every state's going to be different. The lockdowns were different for each state. But I really do like what they did in Florida and the Florida governor. He didn't come along and have sort of conditions. You know, this idea, well, if you're a restaurant and you have less than 100 people, we'll let you keep, you have 50 people. Yeah. And that they can figure this out, which they can. He just opened the doors. I love the picture where the people in Florida actually enjoyed their beaches again. Yeah. And so far, I haven't heard any statistics, and I'll bet if there were a bunch of new cases there, we would have heard about it. No, I think that is very good. And this whole idea of sending kids back, there not many schools are just saying, go back to normal. The doors are open. They don't get sick. Yeah. Just use some common sense. I don't know if much of that happens, except maybe in the few states that never really locked down.
Yeah.
So, but sending them back and then still having them wear some masks and different things. It's an in between. It's not based on a principle. It means I am going to vary my directions, my rules, and I'm just a better rule maker. So if I do it this way and give you this guidance and you'll suffer less, instead of saying like the real story is the lockdown doesn't work. Yeah. It makes things worse. And early on the lockdown was identified as being more detrimental economically than the virus itself. It was the lockdown that caused the economic problems, and now we continuously talk about the health problems. Now we're talking about the future of a generation problem. And they still lumber along and say, well, if Donald Trump wasn't murdering all these kids, it would be all right. It's so sick.
Yeah. Well, you make a good point. The lockdown makes things worse. And here's the next thing I just wanted to throw out here because I saw it. It's from Reuters this morning. And I know you're going to find this interesting. U.S. reports about 300 more deaths during the pandemic than in a typical year. And you read that headline and you'll think, oh my gosh, it's not even 200,000. It's 300,000 that have died. It's getting worse and worse. These are excess deaths, and they're a good way of measuring what's happening during a pandemic. So nearly 300,000 people. So if you read the article, it says that COVID deaths were likely undercounted, and that explains it all. There are actually more than you think. But if you drill down into the article, let's look at this next slide. This is from the article. The largest percentage increase in excess deaths from all causes was among adults aged 25 to 44, and that was 26.5%. Almost a third of the excess deaths were in the category aged 25 to 44. So you think, I didn't realize that was such a high risk of death from COVID. Well, let's look at the chart and find out how much of a high risk. Let's do the next one. This is not from the article. This is from the CDC. 20 to 44 age group, the second from the left, 0.1% of dying. So tons and tons of these 20 to 44-year-olds are dying, and it's not from COVID. It doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to figure out what's killing them.
You mean they lumped them together and they are deceiving us and they're trying to make us more fearful and that we need their help?
By implication they are, yes. Yeah, by implication.
Which is part of the whole game. I wanted to move on to a foreign policy issue, unless you want to have a... Do you have another statement on this?
No, I'm going to circle back around, if you don't mind, toward the end.
This is going to be short, because we talked a little bit about it, because I don't want... and we shouldn't forget about foreign policy.
Yeah.
The foreign policy isn't on the evening news very much, but there's some things going on there, and I think the biggest concern we should have is the attempt to really stir up animosity between American citizens and the Chinese citizens.
Yeah.
You know, everything from the virus to the South China Sea to all these things that the Chinese, are bitter enemies. But there's not a whole lot of talk about, sanctions against China and a few of things like that and getting a sort of a balanced approach to this. But we have definitely increased our military activity. I see just recently John McCain, the McCain vessel, the destroyer.
USS.
It was there.
Yeah.
It was there. I thought, well,
appropriate.
That's appropriate. Yeah. The McCain destroyer down there and have a presence there. But there's just no need under these conditions. And they say, well, China is a threat. Yeah, they're a threat. They're a threat to their own people. We're a threat. We're a threat to them. And there's a lot of threats out there. But there's a lot of, you know, us buzzing their coastland, and I worry about unintended consequences. I worry about things like a red flag, you know, somebody
false flag.
And all that. But this is now these military operations involving more countries: Japan, Australia, and are in the United States. We're all in there together. I mean, why do we need that many people to send a message to China?
Yeah.
I would say that maybe what we ought to do is to talk a little bit less about our military flights close by, and then maybe we can sort some of these trade arguments out, which are a bit complex, but I don't think China is looking to destroy their trade with the world. They're pretty good traders, you know. They end up making a lot of money trading with it. It wouldn't make any sense for them to say, well, let's destroy trade with the United States.
Yeah.
And with in spite of the fact that we're in their face and they'd like to get rid of the dollar as the reserve currency world, right now that's not their goal. It wouldn't even be the best thing for them. But anyway, I think we have problems. I think we're stirring up unnecessarily. I think China has some problems. But I think the last thing you do is you solve your problems by more antagonism and more sanctions. But in order to make the point, the Republicans haven't missed a chance make a statement. Republicans introduces bill that names China that top threat in the world. So be prepared. And, you know, I imagine we'll have a few people in our audience that will say, well, you're missing it. China is a real threat, and they caused the virus and all. Well, we don't know all the details, but I do know that our policies are what we're responsible for. And if it's a policy that's not helping us and endangers us, you know, either financially or militarily, I think we should look at it and try to have a better policy, just like we want to have a better policy for dealing with coronavirus. But if we're not doing a good job managing the coronavirus by keeping our hands off it when we could, then we deserve some more attention on our policies overseas, because I don't see all this activity as a positive step for us our relationships in the Far East.
Well, it's being sold as cost-free, and it's anything but cost-free, first of all, financially. And second of all, it makes things more dangerous. But, you know, it's interesting. I put up an article from Peter Van Buren, our old friend, on the RonPaulInstitute.org website, and he talked about how Biden and Trump relate to China. It's an interesting article. But he makes a good point early on. All of a sudden, after years and years of being terrorized over terrorism, it's nowhere. Nobody talks about it.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't exist anymore. Now it's China and Russia. Terrorism is gone, and it just feels like we're being played. We're being propagandized.
You know, they wouldn't accept our definition or lack of a definition. The terrorism, a terrorist, it really doesn't exist. Terrorism is an activity, and you can't be against an activity. That's like, you know, criminality.
Yeah.
You know, we'll declare war against criminality. Well, which one, where, and who's the criminal? But anyway, I think that's a good analogy. That thank goodness, you know. But we always have to have an enemy.
Yeah,
that we know about. That's been going on for a long, long time, and this is part of it right now. Things are settling down. It's a distraction from the coronavirus for some people, and this exists. But it's something that attitudes have to change.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to zip through. It looks like our time is getting close. I'm going to zip through a couple of things that I clipped before we started, before I completely close. And this is something. Put up this next clip if you want. This is from the New York Times. It has hit us with a vengeance. Virus surges again across the United States. It sounds like people are dropping in the streets. Well, we're not. Well, here's something that was pointed out by our good friend Karen DeCoster. And I told her, I'm going to steal this from you from the show today. This is buried in the article. Look at this. This shows a mentality. In other parts of the country, officials are returning to another tried and true method of containing the virus: stay-at-home orders. So if they were tried and true, how come they have to go back to them, right? If they were so wonderful and amazing in containing the virus, they got to go do it again. Well, obviously, they didn't work. So thanks, Karen, for that. Here's another one, Dr. Paul. Maybe we can look at this in a future show. Let's look at that next one. Coronavirus pandemic to cost Americans $16 trillion, new study finds. Not the pandemic, we would say, but the reaction to it. And here's the final one. I'm going to finish with this because it's the most disgusting, and sadly, it's an appropriate bookend to the show where we focused on what's happening to children because of the ridiculous overreaction from adults. This is from Australia. It came out this morning. Four newborns in Adelaide have died after being denied life-saving heart surgery because it wasn't available in Adelaide and they couldn't be transferred interstate because of travel restrictions. So they would not let these children travel outside of Adelaide to get life-saving surgery because of coronavirus lockdowns. That is murder.
Yeah, that is pretty bad. That's so sad, too, because it's so unnecessary. It's do no harm, and the opposite of do all the harm you can when you have the opportunity. And it's almost like they have to be out of their minds. You know, you make this point that, you know, they go back to doing the same thing again, you know, separation or wearing these masks or all. But there was a study that I think the more time we have, we're going to get more studies like this where they had the two groups. Everybody wore masks. And then they measured who got sick. And the people who wore masks got just as sick as the other one. You know, there wasn't really a significant difference about it. But I bet you the people, but what it was sacrificed, maybe health-wise there was not a whole lot of difference on that test. But just think about sacrificing of liberty and sacrificing freedom to move around if you accept these things. But more and more, there will be these double-blind studies. But the double-blind studies may be just natural. People just saying, I've had it with you guys. You know, I'm going out. But the psychology, the philosophy has to change because this whole thing about seeing people riding around in a car all by themselves with a mask on. They have to wake up. This is unnecessary. And you say, well, that's my business. I can do it. Yeah, sort of. But don't teach your kids to be, you know, terrified of just doing some things that are not natural. And maybe they'd be better off. So it's a shame. I do keep thinking that we are and can turn the corner and start talking about solving problems within the concepts of liberty. We used to do it, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's not giving up science. Matter of fact, if we gave up some of this fraudulent science, we'd be better off. Government, when it gets involved in science, and there's been many, many libertarians and conservative constitutionalists that have complained about the drug industry, you know, and how it's fraudulent and how certain companies are rewarded because they make a lot of profits. There's a lot of that going on, you know, blocking out drugs like hydroxychloroquine at the same time, looking forward to being part of the design for the next vaccine. So there's a lot of fraudulent stuff that goes on there, and people have to have more confidence that it's not like if you take our policies that we've talked about and adopt them, that you wouldn't have answers. You would have different answers. You would have free people making the decisions, you know, independently of the politicians. And that's where the real problem is today, is the politicians that want to tell us everything to do in our lives, when we wear a mask and, you know, everything else, or when we can go to school. So, and to argue the case that if you don't have the government doing it, it would be just total chaos. Well, tell you what, we need a little bit of more chaos coming from liberty, because the chaos then can be hopefully solved in a voluntary way, because that's the way most problems are always solved and have been throughout history. So we're still going to continue to argue the case for a voluntary society that solves medical problems as well as solves the problems in the interest of peace and prosperity. So that's what we will pursue, and we want to thank our viewers for tuning in once more to the Ron Paul Liberty Report, and please come back soon.